this is Ken Logan, Dr. Ken Logan, and you are listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And I'm Ken Logan. I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, and I do the Doctor's Inn. This is the Doctor's Inn show for the next hour. I'm here the third Thursday of each month from 6 to 7. And what I like to do is present subjects of health or medical scenarios or subjects that I think you, the listeners, would be interested in hearing about. I want you to know that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. Speaking of underwriters, the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Deborah Lucero and Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture, producing community festivals and events including Artoberfest, the True North Tour, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by Apollo School of Music, presenting Adult Prom 2019, with a DJ, no-host bar, and a crowning of a king and queen on Saturday, this Saturday, September 21st. Again, that's this Saturday, September 21st, at 936 Mangrove Avenue in Chico. Doors open at 6 p.m. Tickets you can get are on Facebook at Adult Prom 2019 Chico. This event is sponsored by Apollo School of Music. I almost said School of Medicine. being a doctor, I guess. Apollo School of Music and Corollare Consulting, supporting Catalyst Domestic Violence Services and music programs for children. So here you are listening to KZFR, and you're listening to The Doctor's Inn. Again, I'm Dr. Ken Logan from Chico here. And my guest today is Dr. Robin Barlow. She's an MD, a naturopathic doctor here in Chico, California. Say that again. Thank you for being here. Very, very happy that you're here. Now, today's subject that Dr. Barlow and I are going to discuss have to do with medications, and more specifically, prescription medications. And I want you to know that there's a couple. Part of what I'm going to do today is present some information from a Consumer Reports article, where the reporter put together information about the place that prescription medicines have taken in our society, in our medical system here in the United States, the enormous place that prescription medicines have taken in our society. I want to, and I think you'll be interested to hear some of the figures or percentages and that kind of thing. I was kind of blown away. I'll talk a little bit about the Federal Drug Administration, or the FDA, and a history thereof, a couple points that I thought were interesting. And then the cost of prescription medicines has been a big issue forever, but it's really been a big issue here over the last year or two. And there's a National Public Radio article, a reporter, that I'm going to read a couple interesting points that I think you'll, you, the listeners, would like to hear. But the real meat of today's show is going to be Dr. Barlow, Dr. Robin Barlow, the naturopathic doctor here, is my guest today. We're going to discuss non-medical treatments for conditions. And we're actually going to pick a couple medical conditions, and we're going to hear from Dr. Barlow about how she might approach these conditions. And then I'm going to throw in little bits of how I, as an MD, might approach these conditions, and indeed, how we can work together. So, Dr. Barlow, hi.
Hi.
And Dr. Barlow, I'm going to lay out this situation of prescription medicines in the United States, and if you want to throw in any bits of information, you just yell out, okay?
Okay.
So again, I'm going to get a little information to you right now, listeners. This is a Consumer Reports article from August 3rd of 2017 by Teresa Carr. It was in Consumer Reports. Listen to this. More than half, or 55% of United States citizens are on a prescription medicine. That seems kind of, that just blows me away. 55% of us are on prescription medicine. And the average, on average, four prescription medicines. That's amazing. And then of course, there are a number of over-the-counter medications and vitamins and other dietary supplements that people take as well. But today's talk is on prescription products. Where in the United States, more pills are being taken than in any other time in our history as a country, and far more than any other country in the world. We're ahead of everybody on that. Some medications, as we all know, and I as a medical doctor know, are life-saving or life-helping medications, and some, in reality, are not needed. And here's another, with respect to prescription medicines, we all need to know that there's a downside, and here's a point. In 2014, 1.3 million people in the United States went to emergency rooms due to adverse effects from prescription medicines. And here's how many died. You're wondering how many died because of medications, strictly because of prescription medicines. In 2014, 124,000 people died in the United States due to prescription medicines. This was from the CDC, Center for Disease Control, that information, and from the FDA, Food and Drug Administration. And about half of those deaths were preventable, they say. Here's another interesting point. $200 billion per year are spent in the United States on unnecessary or improper use of medications. And all that money is for the drugs themselves and for the related medical costs that comes from unnecessary or improper use of medications. $200 billion a year in the United States. That's a lot of cost, unnecessary cost. Let's see. Oh, and here's another point. As we all know, and as I know as a medical doctor, because of the cost of actually medications that are needed, many people in this country, when they're asked, might cut back on groceries or other things that they need in order to pay for medications. In other words, they can't fit it into their regular budget, so they have to deprive themselves in order to pay for their prescription medicines. That's sick, I think. Between 1997 and 2016, so approximately 20 years span, there was an increase of 85% in the number of prescriptions filled by Americans. An increase of 85%, not 2%, not 5%, not 10%, but 85%. The population only rising by 21% over that time. And the issues that come up with prescription medicines are too many drugs, too many medications, medications that are not needed, sometimes medications given when there isn't a condition there. This Consumer Reports article talks about medications as a preliminary to a potential medical condition that might occur. The one they picked was metformin for people who don't actually have type 2 diabetes but are on the medication prescribed by their doctor, which I have an opinion about sometimes, which I won't go into right now. What organization in the United States regulates prescription medicines? It's the Federal Drug Administration. And the Federal Drug Administration, the history of that, and how it has become involved in prescription products, by my viewing of the history, started around 1938, at which time Congress passed the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. had to do with certain, quote, dangerous drugs, end of quote, were to be by prescription only. In other words, they had to be prescribed, certain dangerous drugs had to be prescribed by a doctor, a physician. That was in 1938. Then in 1951, Congress passed the Durham-Humphrey Amendment to that Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act and laid out that defined the kinds of drugs, medications in a more broad spectrum situation. In other words, medication to be prescribed and not just purchased over the counter. So really the prescription medication situation, or prescription drugs but to be prescribed by medical professionals, really started, it looks like, in 1951. That's not so long ago. It was only 2 years before I was born. And so I don't think it was very long ago at all. Oh, okay, I'm getting old. All right. Some other things happened along the way to kind of put some regulation to over-the-counter products, such as in 1972, the over-the-counter drug review via the FDA. In 1993, the FDA created something called MedWatch, where healthcare professionals had an avenue to report drug reactions and problems with certain medical products. Here's another interesting fact having to do with cigarettes. Listen to this. In 1995, the Federal Drug Administration, FDA, declared that cigarettes were to be defined as a, quote, drug delivery device, which makes sense, and it was limits the issued marketing and sales to help reduce the smoking. Young people started smoking, so it interacted with the cigarette industry relative to marketing and sales to try to decrease the sales to young people. But get this: in the year 2000, the Supreme Court upheld an earlier decision that was a situation between the Food and Drug Administration and something called Brown and Williamson Tobacco Company. That the bottom line is, the FDA was told by the Supreme Court they would not have the authority to regulate tobacco as a drug. So the Supreme Court defined that the FDA could not regulate tobacco as a drug in 2000, which doesn't make sense to me. I don't like that. okay, that's that little bit of information. Dr. Barlow, what do you think about all that? Interesting information, huh?
Yeah, yeah. One thing I thought of while you were giving out the dates of when the prescriptions really started coming out, like in the 1950s, that's kind of when naturopathic medicine was kind of went by the wayside because of the advent of the pharmaceuticals and how they kind of took over and became, you know, the advent of penicillin. It kind of was a miracle drug, and people were thrilled that you could, you know, take something that would, you know, possibly save your life and be, efficient for killing off, you know, different bacteria. So then it kind of rolled along from there and it became like, okay, then pharmaceuticals must be the answer for most things. And then we kind of forgot about the principles of that keep us well, that don't have anything to do with a prescription.
Wow.
And now I think we're kind of coming around, hopefully the other way, where we're starting to recognize the shortfalls and the disadvantages and the complications that come with too many drugs and all the negative side effects that come from that.
And the taking us away from, like you said, taking us away from health advice and things to do in your life that are non-medicinal to help your health and to help medical conditions.
Yeah, and basic principles that have been with us for hundreds, if not thousands of years, basic concepts about health and what keeps us well, and those things kind of just...
You mean those things that you were taught, and you are, I'm going to say the word a specialist in, as a naturopathic doctor, is that what you're telling us?
Yes.
Tell us what
a
naturopathic doctor, tell us about... Naturopath.
Yeah, sure.
How do I say it? Naturopathy.
What? Oh, naturopathic doctor.
What is a naturopathic doctor? And
So we're an MD or naturopathic doctor is trained very similarly to an MD. The curriculum of the two, you know, postgraduate medical schools will be very similar. The first 2 years are your basic sciences, and the latter 2 years are your clinical science.
Similar to how we had it in medical school.
So, you know, we're graduates of 4-year postgraduate naturopathic medical schools that are regulated by the board of the Council of Naturopathic Medical Education. So you pass boards and get your license. We are trained as general practitioners, you know, general health care practitioners.
Like me.
Right, exactly. And in certain states, not every state, but 17, I think, and counting, grows by the year, we're licensed as primary care providers.
So the you said something a few minutes ago about the history, the long history of health,
right,
and the care before we were inundated with prescription medicines, that knowledge and that practice.
Right. And that's where the two systems differ, is then we bring in what we call our naturopathic therapeutics, our tools that we have in addition to prescription medications to help prevent and keep people well.
So let me interject real here, real quick. You said in conjunction or along with, the point I want the listeners to know is that you, as a naturopathic doctor, have the ability to utilize prescription medicines for your clients, your patients as well. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so you've got the big picture going.
Yeah, well, and I also kind of look at it as the way possibly that doctors used to be trained before the advent of pharmaceuticals and before they became as popular as they are and as, you know, widely utilized. So we're kind of what doctors used to be, but we're now kind of coming to the forefront and kind of can assist in kind of healthcare crisis that our country is in. By serving as primary care, we do take a different approach to a lot of conditions, whereas we don't just go to the pharmaceutical immediately. We try to correct the underlying cause, you know, incorporate diet, lifestyle, nutrition, clinical nutrition, educate the patient, you know, doctor as teacher, first do no harm. So we have these principles that guide us where it's not going to be an intuitive response of an ND to go immediately to a pharmaceutical.
But I hope every listener heard that last that last paragraph or that last statement you just said, you know.
But with that said, I do prescribe way more pharmaceuticals than I would like to, just because that's what comes in the door. And, you know, multiple patients on multiple different medications all at the same time, and sorting that out, you know, and working with that. So we do end up prescribing way more than I ever thought that I would. Honestly, in pharmacology, when I was in school, I paid attention and passed, but I thought, why do I need to know all this? I'm not even going to use this stuff. But I actually do use it, and I'm thankful, and I rely on it heavily in some areas, and I see comes in very useful. It's one of the tools, but it's also one of many tools instead of the only
tool. Of the only tool. It made me think about one of the articles I was reading had to do with the job of trying to, if a medical doctor sees a patient on multiple medicines, and sometimes from multiple doctors, multiple medical doctors who don't communicate with each other about their medications and that they're prescribing to that patient, and then the job of whittling down those medicines can be very challenging, but it needs to happen. Mm-hmm. But it can be very challenging, and it made me think of you saying you prescribe multiple. You're prescribing more medicines than you thought you would when you first started out. But I would think in getting patients off of an array of prescription medicines would require, you can't just cold turkey stop some of these things.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I would think that would be part of your tools is to, like, take them off, like, one medicine at a time or one or two and then deal with other aspects of health care to help them not require or feel that they require those prescription products.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a slow process and you're incorporating other, you know, habits, diet, lifestyle habits that can help if the patient's interested. The patient has to be motivated and interested, obviously, but incorporate those things and improve their core organ system function, and then that allows for the medication to be know, there's less need.
Not needed.
You slowly cut it down.
And we're going to talk specifically about a couple medical conditions relative to those specifics here in a few minutes. You know, you make me think. Can I ask you how? Well, let me start out with this. I was talking with a friend of mine recently about a place that she worked, where the doctor she's a nurse, and the doctor she was working for would see minimum 50 patients a day, and it would of course be a very brief visit, and I'm sure it involved I just can't see how it couldn't involve a prescription or more than one prescription per visit, and then write the prescription, get on to the next room, prescription medicine prescription, and that just sounds. I can't say what I think of that over the air, but I will just say that sounds ugly and inappropriate. So what I was going to say, and that was a medical doctor who might see 50 patients a day, and that just is not appropriate. So in my mind, that's my opinion. And remember, the opinions, I don't know if I said this, the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, or underwriters. It's just my opinion. Hey, how many patients do you see a day?
Not that many. I see on average 5 a day, sometimes more. But that's, and in order to, and when I see a new patient, I block off an hour and a half, because it takes that much time to understand and fully have a get a grip on where the patient's health issues are coming from.
I'm going to ask,
understand their health history.
I'm going to ask you to repeat that scenario. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you again. Please just repeat what you just said. So Dr. Barlow, naturopathic doctor, Dr. Barlow, how many patients do you tend to see a day?
About five.
Five patients.
5 to 7.
Not 50.
Not 50. Not even close. There's no way I could do that.
And then. Tell us again what that is. Why you feel
because in order to understand the health conditions the patient's coming with, and most patients are going to have issues in multiple organ systems at one time, so we're not addressing one thing because you're treating the whole person, which involves the mental, the emotional, the nutritional, you know, everything. So there's multiple questions I'll ask. Follow-up visits can be as short as 15 to 30 minutes, but again, that first visit where you're trying to get an understanding of the cause and where to start with the patient. And on what layer, and on what's the weakest organ system, and where do I begin? To me, I don't know. I wish there was a quicker way, but in order to gain a handle on that, it takes time and questions. And the patient fills out an 8-page questionnaire before they come in. So they have to spend some time before they come in. So they come in with that all filled out, so we can start with that.
Yeah, and which means you're a team member with the patient.
Exactly.
It's the both of you.
Yep.
Not just you as the talker and thrower.
And that's one thing, that's why naturopathic medicine might not be the right fit for everyone, and that's one thing also
for
the patient, because much of the responsibility falls on the patient on what to change, what to do, what not to do. You know, the guidelines that we'll provide and the coaching, it really comes down to it's up to the patient to make the time to put it into their health, to improve their health. And if they can't do that, then it doesn't usually work out.
So it makes sense to me that in order to begin and to facilitate and to for continuity and that time needs to be spent. Mm-hmm. That connection, that partnership, takes. It's not a slam dunk. It takes time.
It does.
And you. That's what you do in your practice.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it, you know, it takes time. The time it takes to be healthy. The time you need to put into your sleep and your preparing your food and, you know, shopping for your food and your exercise. I mean, it takes effort and time. And it's so often our lives are so busy. Everybody's busy. Even my retired patients tell me how busy they are. And that makes me a little sad, because I think, wait a minute, that's when you're supposed to have time on your hands to do so. But they're all running around busy. Everybody's busy. And then that, of course, is you have to find, so much of it's about finding that life balance where you carve out even 10 or 15 minutes to meditate or stretch or go into, you know, get some sunlight, go to the park, do something to keep yourself balanced. And so a lot of, you know, I'll discuss that with most patients is what, you know, how are you organizing your day, and, you know, how much sleep do you get, and, you know, all those things that ultimately create health.
And obtain their balance, mm-hmm. like you said.
Yeah. Wow.
I wish there were more of you around.
There's three naturopathic doctors in Chico.
Good.
There's more and more in this state all the time. I think when I moved to California, I was only the 213th
ND in the whole
state, because we were just licensed in 2006 in California.
So naturopathic doctors. This is not. Oh man, I just you know this is. This is not new practice. This is something you're putting together practice from the last for the last hundreds of years of human beings and health, you put it together in your practice. It's and to hear you say you were only there was only 200 and some instead of the.
Well, I think we're probably over 1,000 now. I'm not sure the number in California, but it's growing every year. And naturopathic medical schools their graduating classes are larger every year.
Good.
There's more and more, and more states license or recognizing the ND license every year.
And so, can you tell us again, in the state of California, NDs or naturopathic doctors were first licensed in the state of California when?
I believe it was only in 2006 or 2000, not too long ago, 2005,
right.
Somewhere around in the early 2000s.
Any idea when the very first licensure was in the United States?
It was probably Washington or Oregon, and that would have been, I'm not exactly sure, but decades ago.
Because
those states that have recognized the license for decades, Alaska, Washington, Oregon, I think even Idaho, Montana, Arizona, there in those states, insurance covers. The visit covers everything for an ND. It's part of your insurance.
So health insurance companies are contracted with NDs in those states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about in the state of California? Are health insurances contracted with naturopathic doctors?
It's starting to happen, and some insurance is now covering ND visits as well as any diagnostic labs or imaging that we order is covered. But oftentimes the visit yet is not covered. But
uh-huh.
People with really good insurance, it is covered.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's a new thing.
Yeah.
And so as a naturopathic doctor, like you indicated there, you take care of the whole patient, you spend time, emotional, how they feel emotionally, how their multiple organ systems are functioning, and then your approach has to do with prescription medicines if needed, but other products maybe, and then other avenues of care, mm-hmm. such as, like you said, spending time with them, talking about things like sleep, mm-hmm. Body activity, like exercise, meditation, in other words, time for themselves relative to obtaining their kind of a balance in themselves,
right. Yeah.
Instead of this hectic, stress city mm-hmm. that we tend to mm-hmm. be finding ourselves in here in this country.
Right, yeah.
Wow. Okay, interesting. part of the problem in healthcare as a primary care health provider, part of the problem always is health insurance companies and the role they play. I'm kind of happy, but yet sad when I hear you say that insurance companies are going to be mm-hmm. helpful on are going to participate in contracting with naturopathic doctors. Get ready for some real battles.
Yeah. Well, that is. I know it's a little bit of a double-edged sword there because what allows us to spend the time is, getting paid for that time.
Right.
And the insurance company, so far, and this is starting to happen in Oregon, Portland and Seattle and cities that have licensed and had insurance for naturopathic doctors for many years, it's harder and harder to make the practice run because they're not getting paid what their time is worth for the service they're providing.
The service they're providing is not covered.
It's difficult.
Per se.
And then, you could argue that the reason doctors see 50 patients a day is because they have to make it work, right? I mean, as far as what they're getting paid back from the insurance?
No, I know what you're saying. Your point is, and I understand that, and I understand doctors that will do have that. And I've been in private practice myself, so I know that the overhead, the cost of running an office, is such.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's an overhead that needs to be paid, but there's also that what you indicated is for primary care, the low reimbursement that generally primary care get for seeing patients in the office,
mm-hmm.
not adequately reimbursed for the services rendered.
Mm-hmm.
That's true in primary care. That is true. There's the physicians going into the practice of medicine for making a lot of money
mm-hmm.
or for helping patients. Those two options. Mm-hmm. And those who see 50 patients a day are in for the money. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point I'm making. That. It kind of depends on, it definitely depends on the reason or the character qualities of the doctor, be it a naturopathic doctor or a medical doctor,
right.
Relative to how many patients you see in a day and how you handle your patients. Oh, gosh. Well, I tell you what. let's take a couple medical conditions and describe. I'd like the listeners to hear some of the options that you and I can come up with that are non-medicinal. Non-prescription, and where the prescriptions fit in as well.
Okay.
What do you think?
Sure. Do you want to give me a condition, or do you want to start?
Sure. Well, I was thinking we might take, as you and I talked about a little bit ahead of time, something like hypertension or high blood pressure, and then we might talk about diabetes here in a minute,
okay.
since that's one that I tend to deal in a fair amount.
Yeah.
But it's way diabetes happens to be one of the medical conditions that is absolutely a medical condition that non-medicinal care mm-hmm. or treatment, self-treatment, is enormous. Mm-hmm. And so, but let's start with hypertension, sure. high blood pressure.
Yeah. Well, first, you know, most conditions of hypertension will present to the office already diagnosed. They'll come in previously diagnosed.
Oh, uh-huh.
Sometimes we'll make the diagnosis in the office, but I'm saying what I most commonly see will be a hypertensive patient on at least 2 to 3. Actually, this week I did have one, I think, on 7 or 8 different blood pressure. It was a disaster.
Enormous. Oh, wow.
And that's, you know, with that, when I see that situation, I think about the metabolism of the drug and the phase 1, phase 2 metabolites and the P450 enzyme, which most medications are going to go through.
And what's that mean?
Well, when you have that many medications sharing the same enzymatic pathway, there's going to be negative side effects, more frequent negative side effects from the medication, and likely that many, if not half, of those medications aren't even going to be benefiting the patient because they're going to be hung up on the same pathway.
So the P450 enzyme pathway that you're talking about is... What's that mean?
Oh, that's part of where the substrate of the medication is metabolized.
So the substrate means the actual chemical or the product itself
right.
is metabolized, or how the body is going to deal with that.
Right.
And the liver, our liver in our body is the organ that deals with toxins and other things such as medications. It's
right.
They pass in the bloodstream, they pass through the liver, and the liver deals with them. And it's mm-hmm.
P450. So cytochrome P450
is one of the enzyme or the protein situations in the liver that deals with can break down or change the product
right.
or mm-hmm. change the product into a product that is supposed to do the job
or
the positive job.
Or the pathway gets overwhelmed and so the medications aren't even really doing their job they're supposed to because there's too much. And then if you throw on a botanical that might be sharing the same pathway.
A botanical means a non-prescription or a herbal product.
Mm-hmm. That might be an inhibitor or an inducer of the P450 enzyme, and then you can really have a lot of negative interactions going on between vitamins, botanicals, or herbal medicine, plus the prescription.
So,
and I do see that quite a bit.
So what Dr. Barlow is telling us is when multiple products, such as prescription medicines, multiples, and then other products the patient might be taking or that would be beneficial to the patient, botanicals or herbal products, either beneficial or not, they're all passing through the liver and utilizing potentially the same enzyme or protein system that the liver uses to deal with
metabolize. I would use the word metabolize, or break the drug down.
Break the drug down to mm-hmm. dispose of it, or sometimes to make the drug useful.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
needed to actually make the drug useful for us. It
right.
gets overwhelmed. When there's multiple products, it can mm-hmm. like overdo
right.
too much, and therefore the products that the patient was on, if there were multiple,
right.
they're not getting the good out of
yeah.
them.
Yeah, they might even not be acting as a diuretic or an ACE inhibitor because if there's too many. And again, so I look at that
uh-huh.
factor, especially
mm-hmm.
when there's a long list of medications.
Yeah.
But then I also do a thorough workup of underlying causes that may or may not have been looked at. So kidney health, adrenal health, cardiovascular health, cholesterol, circulation. And then from a naturopathic perspective, I'll be looking at things that could be throwing blood pressure off. So stress, toxicant exposure in the blood. So I'll run certain panels. It'll give me levels. Looking at digestive health, dysbiotic terrain. So I'll really do a thorough look at what else could be causing the blood pressure if it's not readily apparent. And then do my best to address those issues. And then this process will take months to, if not years, to sort all this out, depending on the constitution of the patient, depending on genetics. Sometimes I will dive into that if I can't figure it out, but kind of a last resort because that's something I'm new and just learning. But then some patients do have the capacity to maybe eventually come off of their blood pressure medication and rely on an herbal hypertensive botanical formula, maybe some magnesium, CoQ10, those kind of things are heart-supportive nutrients. But then there's patients that cannot, and they're better off to stay on their med. We find the best dose for them, support any nutrient deficiencies created by the medication, which blood pressure medications are pretty well known for that. So supporting zinc or any depleted potassium, magnesium, looking at those levels in the blood, making sure that's all balanced. Of course, diet, exercise, looking at the strength of their heart as a muscle, and looking at all of that too. So it's kind of a long, step-by-step process of evaluating all that and then seeing what we can do. And of course, every case is different. Some patients are never going to get off their medication, and that's fine as long as we can improve and make their quality of life the best it can be. And others do have the potential to get off of it because they may have, like you mentioned at the beginning of the show, been put on the medication kind of prematurely when their body didn't give a chance to see if it could, improve in that area.
So if you see a patient with high blood pressure that you diagnose, you make the diagnosis of high blood pressure in the office.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've talked about a workup, what you would mm-hmm. go through in a workup over time.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of things come to mind? Absolutely, for every high blood pressure person that would be non-medicinal, that you would feel would be beneficial for them to do in their life, let's say?
Well, exercise, of course. That's number one.
So getting active, having some body activity, being the role that body activity exercise plays in that cardiovascular or the heart and blood vessel health. Okay,
exactly,
it's important.
Yeah. Sunlight, also key for cardiovascular health.
Wow.
Effective at, you know, sulfate synthesis happens only when vitamin D starts with the sunlight, the UV light hitting the skin. Incredibly important for how we metabolize our cholesterol. So sunlight, getting outdoors, we've kind of gotten really far removed from that. I think for most people, spend most of their day inside.
I did not know that fact about the...
Yeah, there was a study, I can't give you an exact source, of a sunbathing study done in Australia. The patients in the study did not change diet or lifestyle. All they did was sunbathe for 30 minutes a day, and their total cholesterol dropped by, like, on average 30 points.
Wow.
Also can be helpful for lowering blood pressure, but that was, you know, an Australian study. I think it's a pretty old study.
Mm-hmm.
But just an idea of how... Yeah, and the heart, you know, as a center for, you know, we're all going to have kind of our weak organ system, but, you know, it takes the brunt of stress for a lot of people. So that's a definite, talking about stress management, some people can feel their blood pressure going up and tools to try to combat that. But there are certain constitutions that, of course, just are going to need a little extra help, and that's where I would bring in a low dose, you know, least side effects possible medication. If we try everything, we try diet, lifestyle, everything else we can think of, and we just can't get it down, then it's going to be in their best interest to be on a medication.
And yet not give up and not throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Yeah, keep doing all those other things. Otherwise, they're going to need more.
Yeah, they're going to get maybe other health problems if they don't take care of their body activity and their dietary intake appropriately, as among other things.
Yes.
Hey, type 2 diabetes, do you have... Where do you sit on the treatment of type 2 diabetes?
Well, again, diet, lifestyle is huge. It's largely a preventable condition, I think you would agree, with type 2.
I would put it this way: largely treatable by non-prescriptions.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
To make it.
But the whole
not a problem.
Right. But the whole epidemic that we're seeing is a reflection of our sedentary lifestyle and very poor, depleted nutrient diet. You know, calorie dense, nutrient depleted. We're not cut out to eat that way. And if you start that at a young age, which we see now more and more, and you have obesity and blood sugar issues as a young, you know, 10, 12-year-old, then you've really set the stage for end organ damage, you know, at a very early age. So, yes, treatable, but definitely have to really, motivate the patient to make those changes, and they have to keep at it.
And you know what, I was going to say this earlier, motivate the patient. You said motivate the patient and encouraging them and empowering them and working with them, supporting them on these lifestyle changes to help their health for cases such as with high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes. The term that comes into my mind of what you do in your work, it sounds like, is, let me ask you, do you do any educating of the patient, or are you, it was like, duh.
Yeah, most of the visit is spent, you know, if not providing reason behind what I'm prescribing or recommending, so that it's not just a, like, here, take this, and, you know, it's
educating, you're talking, you're discussing, you're teammating with.
Yeah. Doctor as teacher is one of the principles that our naturopathic medicine is founded upon.
Can you say that one more time? What did you just say?
Doctor as teacher.
Doctor as teacher is one of the...
Mm-hmm. First, do no harm, treat the whole person, treat the underlying cause, and always honor the underlying wisdom of the body, Mother Nature.
Wow.
So, and that's kind of part of every... It's so ingrained in the education that you come away with, you know, that just carries through into the how you just talk with your patients and explain things. And a lot of patients, I think, that seek out an ND already kind of have an understanding of they are aware of the wisdom, the innate healing wisdom of the body, and they've recognized it in their life, and they honor it, and they don't want to just, you know, take something they might not have to if it can be fixed another way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's downsides to it, to just taking a pill.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to say briefly that, you know, we just talked about type 2 diabetes, and we talked about lifestyle, and we talked about body activity or exercise, and we talked about dietary things that would be beneficial to them. And then there is, as Dr. Barlow and I both know, there are pieces to the treatment or the care that will, like you said, prescriptions when needed.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if their pancreas is not adequately making insulin, they're going to need some insulin, unfortunately.
Yep. Yes.
They're going to be in need to give themselves some insulin.
Yep.
Hey, I just have to say this because I just got to read this.
Mm-hmm.
This is from that National Public Radio article about the cost and the changes of cost of medicines. I just couldn't believe what I read. Get this. I mean, I've witnessed it, but I didn't actually know the specific figures. Insulin. The cost of prescription insulin doubled. The cost doubled twice as the cost between the years of 2012 and 2016, according to the Healthcare Cost Institute. One brand, and I don't know if I should say the brand of insulin or not. Let me not say it. But one of the brands of commonly used insulin in people rose about 50% in 1 year alone, in 2014 alone. And it's astronomical now, the cost of that particular insulin. Like, that 50% in 2014, but that's just a piece of where that insulin has gone up. And the reason they did it was for cost, was for profit. For their profit, for the pharmaceutical industry profit. There's no other reason. Because they don't have all their development and costs relative to development are like 17%. The cost of any medication for pharmaceutical companies, the cost, when you look at the amount of intake of funds they get from their products, 17% of that is what they had to spend relative to development, research and development. So that all the rest of it is profit. So what would that be? 83% of what they bring in is for profit, if 17% is for research and development. So, gosh.
That should be illegal.
Yeah, it should be illegal. Hence the... it should be illegal. Hence the, you know, we've even heard the president of the United States, Mr. What's his name? The T word.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about, I don't know why I even brought it up, because I can't believe he's going to do this, but putting some, working towards getting some health, some control over pharmaceutical costs.
Yeah, I thought I heard something about that this morning, like an international, you know, regulatory body that would, you know, put a limit on that kind of profit.
Boy, wouldn't that be, I think that would be excellent.
Yeah. One thing I might add, I don't know if I should, mm-hmm. but because of the cost of some medications that I might recommend or prescribe, and the patient might not have insurance, or even with their insurance, a high deductible, not covered. So Canadian pharmacies is sometimes
much more reasonable for some odd reason. And I don't know what that is, but and I don't have any problem with patients getting their prescription medicines from Canada. I don't know what I'd do if I had diabetes and
didn't have insurance.
I don't know what I'd do. I know there's a lot of patients. Well, there's patients. Of course, maybe we haven't all heard, but you know, there's been deaths. I ran across that when I was on the internet looking about costs of medicines. You know, yeah, there have been deaths due to patients not buying their insulin
because they can't afford it.
Because they can't afford it. That's possible. I mean, that's true. But then the other side of that, not death, but just not adequately taking care of your health.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, yeah, you've stayed alive, but you haven't adequately stayed alive relative to your health. You know, because you haven't been able to have the amount of insulin your body needs because it's so darn costly.
Right. Yeah.
I saw a patient a couple days ago who had run out of one of his insulins for 2 weeks.
Wow.
He had one of the two insulins. He ran out of one for 2 weeks, and I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I'm glad you're alive.
Yeah.
I'm glad you didn't end up in the emergency room in acidosis. But anyway, bummer, man. Hey, Dr. Barlow, Robin Barlow, doctor of naturopathic medicine in Chico, California, was sitting here with us today, and you, the listeners, were able to hear what I just enjoyed hearing your approach to the patient. The human.
Thank you, Ken. And I want to thank you for all of your service to the community. I don't know if your listeners know that, how much you volunteer and donate your time.
Yeah.
You are a shining example of what an MD should be. And if there were more like you, this would be a different place.
Yeah, whatever. Hey, the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Inn Town Campground. And Inn is I-N-N. I-N-N Town Campground, located minutes from downtown Nevada City, providing a new, vibrant camping experience. This historic, wooded, 15-acre, family-friendly campground offers tent sites, deluxe canvas tents, and electricity, real beds and linens. And there's an RV area with hookups, too. For reservations and information, visit InTown Campground. And again, InTown is I-N-N, towncampground.com. Or call 530-265-9900. And by Feather River Nature Center Dinner and Dance. This elegant event will be held on Friday, September 27th. That happens to be, that's 2 weeks, a week and a half away. Friday, September 27th, on the levee, overlooking the beautiful Feather River in historic downtown Orville. Choose between grilled salmon, tri-tip, or grilled portobello mushrooms. Hors d'oeuvres, oysters, live music, and no-host bar at 6, dinner at 7, and dancing at 8. For tickets and details, visit Orville Salmon Festival on Facebook, or you can call 530-520-4742. And any music? Can we do music?
It's been a holiday, it's
goodbye. Hey, I'd like to see, listen again a month from today, third Thursday of the month, for the Doctor's Inn, 6 to 7, the third Thursday of every month. Thank you to Dr. Barlow, and thank you to Chris Nelson for helping me with the show.
You know I work all day to get your money to buy a thing, and it's worth it just to hear you say you're gonna give me everything. So why I let you alone? 'Cause I'm